Greetings and hello. Welcome back to the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stansel. And today we're talking with Juliette Hooker. She's a professor of political science at Brown University. And her book is Theorizing Race in the Americas, Douglas, Sarmiento, Du Bois, and Vasconcelos. And so this is a really interesting book. She takes these four thinkers and really does a nice analysis of them. She pairs them together, Douglas and Sarmiento, Du Bois, and Vasconcelos. So I really think you're going to enjoy this interview. And if you know anything about any of these four, you're definitely going to learn some different things that you may not have known before about how they're similar and different. So enjoy and give it a listen. This is James Stansel, and welcome to the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. And I have the great pleasure today of being here with the author of Theorizing Race in the Americas, Juliette Hooker. She is a professor of political science at Brown University. Hello, how are you doing today, Ms. Hooker, Dr. Hooker?
I'm great. Thank you. Really glad to be here with you.
It's my pleasure. And when I saw your book, I was like, man, this looks really, really interesting. I've got to get Juliette on the show so we can kind of talk about some of these things so the members of our listening audience can really get more informed about the connections between the African-American scholars and the scholars in the Latin American world. Douglas, and tell me if I pronounce any of these names wrong. English is my language I'm best at. Douglas Sarmiento?
Yes.
Oh, I'm all right. Du Bois, mm-hmm. No doubt. Du Bois. And Vasconcelos, right. That's the subtitle. So the book is Theorizing Race in the Americas, Douglas Sarmiento, Du Bois, and Vasconcelos. How's that?
Perfect.
Oh, yes, yes. Awesome. It's been a while since I've taken Spanish, Juliette, but, you know, I live in Houston, so I can do a little something-something here and there. And your book is published by Oxford University Press. And I mentioned Houston because you, until this summer, were not too far down the road from me, right? You were an associate professor at University of Texas at Austin, but now you are, congratulations, a full professor at Brown University. So congratulations to Dr. Hooker on that.
Thank you. I'm very excited. But, you know, it's also bittersweet in the sense that I spent many years, happy years, at the University of Texas at Austin, mm-hmm. which is a great place to start my career. So
absolutely. It's a great school. And I wish you were still close by locally so we could, you know, chat it up. But that's OK. The people at Brown University in Rhode Island are definitely very lucky to have you.
Thank you.
All right. So enough of those kind of things and those congratulatory things like that. But let's kind of get into a little bit about your background, Juliette, before we kind of talk about the book, because the listeners like to know who are the people who write these books. It could be their next door neighbor, right? Or their cousin, their Aunt Juliette. And so maybe if you don't mind, can you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of what led you or, you know, or piqued your interest in this particular topic for this book?
Sure. So I'm originally from Nicaragua. I grew up there. Okay. My whole family's from there. And we're from the Caribbean coast of Nicaragua, which is a British colony. It was never colonized by the Spanish. That's why I have a, you know, kind of Anglo-sounding name rather than a traditional Spanish surname.
Right.
And it's also the place where you have Black people mm-hmm. in Nicaragua. And so I come from one of those groups of communities of people of African descent from Nicaragua. And we, you know, have the experience of, you know, not really being recognized as really existing because people don't think mm-hmm. you're Black people in many countries in Latin America, or it's not something that people acknowledge. So so I think one of the things that happened for me is, you know, so I grew up in Nicaragua, you know, like a lot of people there. I had family who had moved to the U.S. and eventually I came to the U.S.
Right.
to go to college and then stayed for grad school and then got a job, so stayed for that. So in my own history, I had this experience of migration and also of, you know, traveling and seeing how ideas are different in one place than they are in another, but also seeing the connections, right? And seeing the connections between Black people in different parts of the Americas.
Right.
So, you know, my first book was on the kinds of rights that people of African descent have won in Latin America in the past 20 years. And then I became interested in the fact that there's this way in which we tend to not see Latin American and U.S. ideas about race as actually being conversation, right? We see them as people have this kind of idea of, you know, the U.S. has the black-white binary, and it has the one-drop rule, and it had, right, very, you know, sort of clear institutionalized legal segregation, things like Latin America had a different history, right? There's more acknowledgement of mixture historically. There wasn't legal in most countries, not at all. There wasn't legal segregation, but you still have the same kind of racial inequalities that you see in the U.S. and you still have racism. So, but because of these differences, people tend to forget that there is actually a lot of connection and a lot of ways in which ideas about race in Latin America and in the U.S. Were shaped in conversation or in dialogue with, you know, with that, what I call in the book, that American other, right? So either the U.S. for the Latin Americans or Latin America for the African American thinkers like Frederick Douglass and W.B. Du Bois that I talk about in the book.
Absolutely.
So that was part of, you know, what drew me to this is trying to say, well, let's go back and look and see, are these ideas really that different, or were people really trying to, you know, or is there really more, were there more links and connections than we usually acknowledge?
Wow. Yeah. And it's really interesting. And, you know, it was really, you know, my first time, you know, seeing the connection between these Latin American, you know, writers and scholars and, you know, Douglass and Du Bois. You know, I've kind of studied some of them separately, but, you know, you really did a good job kind of making those connections and looking at, you know, those similarities. And, you know, we talked a little bit about offline about the whole idea of the, you know, African diaspora and the different experiences. And you live that. You know, you yourself. I mean, it was a, you know, it was a part of your life. Well, I did too. But, you know, for me, it's different because you come from Nicaragua versus me coming from the United States. So yeah, absolutely, Julia. Thank you for sharing your story and, you know, where your interest springs from, you know, in this topic. And so, going from that, maybe let's talk a little bit about, you know, the book and maybe some key points or ideals that you would want a reader to get out of it, or that someone who is maybe thinking about picking up your book, some things that they can look out for.
Yeah, you know, I think some of the main things that come out of the book are that there has been a lot more connection between the U.S. and Latin America than we tend to acknowledge, right? So one of my favorite chapters in the book is the chapter on Frederick Douglass, because one of the things that it shows is even in the 19th century, right, when you have, it was so difficult to for people to travel, it took so much longer. We didn't have things like, you know, social media where you could immediately see what's going on in a different part of the world. African Americans before the Civil War knew about Black people in other parts of the Americas. They were looking to Central America and the Caribbean and the experiences of Black populations there as models for what they wanted, right, what freedom could look like, what political equality could look like.
Right.
Now, we had a kind of romanticized view of these places, right? Wasn't, you know, but at the same time that they used those, that vision of what was possible, what they thought was possible, right, in Latin America to then say it's also possible in the U.S.
Right.
and to argue against slavery. So that's one of the things that I find so fascinating about you know, tracing this history, mm-hmm. is seeing that even in times when we would have thought there weren't connections or people weren't aware of each other, that people and important figures like Douglass, whom we, you know, of course, everybody knows Douglass and they know his story, mm-hmm. as somebody who escaped slavery, becomes this great orator and abolitionist, but they don't know that Douglass wrote about Haiti or that he wrote about Central America, that he published things in his newspapers about these parts of the world, right? So part of what's interesting to me about the book, I think, is realizing that we almost think about African Americans as more sort of focused on the U.S. than they are. We forget mm-hmm. that we've been making connections with, you know, people in the diaspora, but also looking to beyond the U.S. Mm. at certain points, right, when they think about their political possibilities and aspirations.
Right, right. And if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Douglass the ambassador to Haiti at some point?
He was. In the 1890s, he was named ambassador to Haiti. And that was a really important moment in his career, because mm-hmm. the U.S. was trying to negotiate the lease of this port that the Haitians, who, of course, had this very proud history, Haiti, of course, being the first, black republic.
Right.
And the one where slaves rebelled and won their freedom mm-hmm. at the same time as they won independence from France.
Right.
So Haiti has always been super important, and Douglass was, you know, always said this about Haiti. Mm-hmm. And so he's named ambassador. You know, one of the things that he says is, I don't want us to try to treat the Haitians differently than we would if we're negotiating with France or mm-hmm. Great Britain. We can't get them to agree, then we need to respect that rather than having the U.S. impose its own power.
Right.
Right? So he had this vision where the U.S. was going to have a kind of treat Latin American and Caribbean countries as equals, which didn't really, you know, wasn't what the U.S., which at this point is trying to expand, right, these points, and is a really high point of U.S. Imperial expansion.
Absolutely.
So he ends up being, so the press, even though he wasn't, so then there's the other thing, which is that because he's black, mm-hmm. The people in the U.S. think that he's too, he has too much sympathy mm-hmm. for the Haitians, and he's not representing them.
Of course.
Right? And then, yep. So there's this whole moment where the press, like, you know, all these negative articles about him come up, and they're saying, you know, and they blame him even though he wasn't the lead negotiator. And then at the same time, for Caribbean leaders and intellectuals, many of them were very critical of him because they thought he had basically sold out to the U.S. That he was just representing the interests of the U.S. looking out for Haiti. And so it's this really interesting moment at the end of this his career where he becomes really disillusioned and resigns. But then, and this is where I end the chapter on Douglass in the book, mm-hmm. the Haitians, there's a World's Fair, World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
The Haitians are able to have an exhibit, and they ask Douglass to put together the Haitian exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
So Douglass puts together the Haitian exhibit, and the interesting thing about it is that African Americans were excluded from the U.S. exhibit because it's supposed to show, basically, it was really racist in the way it was designed. So it was supposed to show the progress from, you know, the savage people to the very civilized. And so at the top of civilized, so they couldn't have black people in their exhibit. So what Douglass was able to do is he was able to showcase all of these famous African-American artists. He had poets like Paul Florence Dunbar. He had Isaac well, speak. Mm. He was able to showcase African American accomplishments in the Haitian exhibit.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's something else. And it's really, a sad statement about where we were as a country at that time. But it speaks of the ingenuity of one of our greatest African-American leaders.
Right. Absolutely. Yep.
So those are the kind of things that you can read about and learn about in Juliet's book, Theorizing Race in the Americas. Douglas, Sarmiento, Du Bois, and I'll try it one more time, Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
Vasconcelos.
Celos.
Ah, almost. Vasconcelos. Right. And so we're here. Well, I can say it after you say it. So we're here with Juliet Hooker, a professor of political science at Brown University, formerly of the University of Texas at Austin. So she was a Texan for a period of time, and she loved her time as a Texan, but we're so sad that she had to go. But we understand she had to go to advance her career. So we certainly understand that. So Theorizing Race in the Americas. So before we talk about some of the other subjects and topics in your book, I really love this cover, Juliet. So can you tell us a little bit about this cover image and why you chose it or the publishers chose it for the book?
Yeah, so the cover image is actually an illustration from a collection of hand-drawn maps and illustrations that Du Bois commissioned for the exhibit on the Negro that he put together for the Paris World's Fair.
Okay.
And so there's a whole set of really they're beautiful images of graphs and charts, but they all have this kind of modernist look to them.
Right.
Because it was of the time in the 1920s, that was the sort of graphic kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
And so this map is a map of the distribution of the Negro race, right?
Mm.
And it's and what I liked about it, the reason we chose this image is because it shows, right, the Americas in one globe, and then it's got Africa in the other, and then you have lines of connection.
Oh, but yeah.
You see the U.S. and Latin America, it kind of gave this idea of the sort of hemispheric, connections between people that the book is really about. And also, of course, it was commissioned by Du Bois, who's one of the people that I write about in the book, so it seemed very appropriate.
I would agree, and it's a great cover image. And Juliet did a great job describing that image, but if you are visual and you couldn't kind of see what she was describing, you can go to our blog page, our blog post for this podcast on the New Books Network, on the New Books in African American Studies page. And you can see the beautiful image of the cover, and you can see Juliet, and you won't see me, but you can see Juliet and her book cover, and you can click through from our blog page there, and you can purchase a copy of Juliet's book from our bookselling partner, right? And so you can read the description about the book and go right through and purchase it. And there's also links up there for Juliet's page, with the publisher as well as at her university. I'm sorry, Julie. I think you were going to say something. Go ahead.
I just wanted people to know that these, all of the images that Du Bois commissioned for the Paris exhibit are available at the Library of Congress. So if you go to the Library of Congress website, you can see all of those images.
Absolutely. So you can go right to that website and you can see them. Thank you for mentioning that, Juliet, because it's really good for people to know and that these resources are available. Right. And that they have access to. Right. So you told us a little bit about Douglas. Can you, maybe talk about some of the other scholars that maybe in the United States we may not be as familiar with, but who are definitely, I can tell you, very interesting that you wrote about here.
Yeah. So the structure of the book is it's divided into two parts.
Mm-hmm.
And so each part is has two chapters, one on a U.S. thinker and the other on a Latin American thinker. And the idea is that what we're getting is by putting, you can read each chapter by itself, but it works better if you read it with its companion, right? Because what you're getting is that each of these figures, they were roughly contemporaries. Mm-hmm. So Douglas is paired with this famous Argentinian statesman and intellectual Domingo Faustino Sarmiento. Is his full name. And he was, like Douglas, interestingly, I mean, when you think about these two figures, you would say, looking at it, oh, these are very different people. Douglas is the ex-slave, right? Fugitive slave. And Sarmiento was a, very elite Argentinian, somebody who would, basically white, and very elite person, but he was also a journalist like Douglas. He also founded a number of newspapers. He was also a diplomat. He was named ambassador of Argentina to the U.S. during the post-Civil War, during the Reconstruction era, when they were trying to implement all of the measures to try to really change the South and make it more equal. And so, and he rose to become president of Argentina. And Sarmiento is actually seen as one of the Latin American thinkers who's seen as actually fairly racist, to be quite honest. He was very racist against, in particular, indigenous people, so he had very racist views of the native population in Latin America. But ironically, he actually had a much more positive view of Black people.
Okay.
Black population in Argentina, in part because he had these ideas of the city as being more civilized than the countryside. And the Black population lived in the city, and so he saw them as more advanced. But what I write about in the book is the fact that Sarmiento is usually seen as a Latin American thinker who was one of these people who thought that the way for Latin America to develop was to imitate Europe, right? To be European, to leave aside all of its American influences and try to become like Europe. This is based on the first book he wrote, which was published in 1845, which coincidentally is the same year that Douglas also publishes his first book, The Narrative of Life of Frederick Douglass, also 1845. And so they were contemporaries, right? So they were writing at the same time. I didn't find any evidence that they necessarily knew each other, but when Sarmiento comes to the U.S., he is actually involved. There are all these sort of freedmen aid societies, these societies that were created to help the freed ex-slaves in the South that were founded schools, right, and doing all of this work. And he actually attended some of the meetings of the freedmen aid society in New York, and he was very interested in the work that they were doing, building schools in the South, because he saw it as a model for how Argentina had its own public education system.
Right.
So what I write about in the chapter on him is how interesting it is that this figure, right, comes to the U.S. during Reconstruction and takes away this idea that you can create this public education system and really models that on some of the changes that are happening in the South.
Okay.
And this has been something that, so basically my argument around him is that what hasn't been recognized by most of the scholarship is how much he was influenced by the U.S., right?
Okay.
So instead of actually it being about him wanting Latin America to be like Europe, he then sees the U.S. as a model. But then when the U.S. begins, again, in that period, towards the end of the 19th century, after the Spanish-American War, when the U.S. begins to try to acquire, territory,
In Latin America, right.
In Mexico, what's now Texas, right? And other territories, the Latin Americans begin to be very concerned about the U.S. because they're like, where are they going to stop? Are they going to take us all over? Are we going to lose our identity? And so he begins to be much more critical of the U.S. and to be much more concerned about what the dangers of U.S. expansionism are for America.
Wow.
So I write about those tensions in the chapter on him in the book.
All right. Well, I can definitely see why you pair up Douglas with Sarmiento, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, these are the types of ideals and connections and great research that Juliet did in her book. And I definitely, you know, recommend it. You may know a little bit about Douglas and Du Bois or even these Spanish-speaking scholars, but have you seen the comparison, the connections and things that Juliet has worked on and worked through in her book? So great job, Juliet. It's really interesting to hear you talk about these things. I'm sure our audience is really interested in it as well. And the name of that book, Theorizing Race in the Americas. I'm gonna try it again, Juliet. Let's see if I can. Douglas, Sarmiento, Du Bois, and Vasconcelos.
Yay, there you go.
Got it. Vasconcelos with Juliet Hooker. She's the professor of political science at Brown University. Right. And a native of Nicaragua. So she does have some experiences with, you know, this part of the world that she writes about as well, both of them. And in America's in toto. Right. North America and Latin America. Very good. So we know about Douglas. You've told us a little about Sarmiento. I think many people know about the great scholar W.E.B. Du Bois. So if you want to talk about him a little bit, you can, or, you know, please definitely mention him within the context of Vasconcelos, whom you write about towards the end. Right.
Yeah. So the second pairing in the book is between Du Bois and Vasconcelos, who are both also contemporaries, right?
Right.
Both born at the end of the 19th century and then go on to have these long careers in the first half of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And what I write about in both of those chapters is actually how at this point, particularly because my focus in my chapters on them are on their writings, both of their writings from the 1920s and 1930s. And what's interesting to me is how at this time, early in the 20th century, right, and this is before, of course, you have decolonization in Africa. So you know, so all of Africa is still a colony. You don't, you know, what we know of as the third world, right? You know, that doesn't really exist yet as such because, you know, Southeast Asia isn't independent. Africa isn't independent, right? So all of these, Latin America is independent, but you don't have this kind of sense of you know, this idea. You have all of these places that were formerly colonies where you have mostly people of color, and that they have something in common because of a kind of anti-colonial, right?
Mm-hmm.
A desire to they became independent by becoming free from European
control.
So what I write about in both of those chapters is how for both Du Bois and Vasconcelos, they talk about this idea of racial mixing as a metaphor for thinking about how people of color in different parts of the world can make common cause, can become allies in this anti-colonial struggle. And they do it in very different ways. So I talk about them as examples of these kind of mixed race ideologies where they see mixture as something that's associated with the future, right? Mm-hmm. That world is moving. And they see it as something that can, that for them is a way of thinking about what I consider to be these political alliances that they want to see. Right? Now, there are problems with this, of course, and because, you know, people can, you know, certainly mixture as Du Bois in particular acknowledged, you know, one of the things that he talks about is how, you know, mixing had happened essentially because of rape and, you know, violation of non-white women. And so, you know, it's not to glorify it. But what's interesting to me is how these, you know, in their writings from this time, this is such a persistent theme. Mm-hmm. So, and this is something that is unusual because people don't write about this, think about this as something that Du Bois wrote about, right? Mm-hmm. We think about Du Bois and we think about the souls of black folk.
Right.
And we think about, you know,
Philadelphia Negro. Yeah.
Right. Or the conservation of races essay, right, when he calls for black institutions. But what I focus on is in the 1920s, there was this, you know, that's the time when you have people are really trying to legalize segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to think about because of the current controversy with the Confederate statues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That these were put up right after the Civil War. But mm-hmm. in fact, most of them are put up in the 1920s and 1930s mm-hmm. when the U.S. was really trying to
struggle during those Jim Crow years, right?
Jim Crow, and it's the height of lynching and racial terror, right?
Mm-hmm. So immigration.
And of trying to put in these immigration bans, right? Against people from Latin America, against Asians, Chinese. So you have all of these various policies that are trying to keep the U.S. white, right? And keep people from mixing. And one of them is that they're trying to put in these bans on interracial marriage, mm-hmm. right? Trying to prevent people from marrying across racial lines. And so Du Bois and the NAACP, which had just been formed in 1909, they start fighting against these bans because we want to be marrying white women. Because of course it's always black men and white women that people are somehow most worried about.
Right.
And so he says, but because it's a basic right that you should be able to marry whoever you want to marry that wants to marry you, right? And so part of what I write about in the chapter is how, on the one hand, you have this public policy fight in the U.S., right, around whether people are going to be able to marry across racial lines,
mm-hmm.
and how that becomes bound up with these other fights about segregation, about trying to maintain racial purity, et cetera. So that mixture, this idea of mixture, even if it was just, you know, not the fact itself, but the idea, becomes a stand-in for the possibility of, you know, of political equality, of moving beyond Jim Crow,
mm-hmm.
et cetera. And I focus in particular on a novel of his. This is really fascinating. So he wrote some novels. One of them is this novel called Dark Princess.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about this Indian woman, this Indian princess, I mean, from India.
Okay.
And she has a romance with this African-American man from the U.S. And this is the story of how they lead this global anti-colonial revolution he has this idea of the Council of the Darker Peoples of the World, who are struggling in Japan and Egypt, in the U.S., to overthrow white supremacy.
Hmm.
That's one of the things that I write about in that chapter.
Ah, that sounds like a movie plot there or something.
Right, exactly. I mean, think about this. Came out in 1928. When this came out, the New York Times was just like their review. They were just high. They were like, "What is Mr. Du Bois thinking? This is, you know, this is offensive on all kinds of levels, right?
Right?
People just didn't know what to make of it." So,
wow.
So it's really about these attempts by people at this time when you couldn't imagine so many things that we take for granted now, right? How do we imagine that future in this moment of racial violence and racial terror and anti-immigrant sentiment? How do we imagine a future beyond that?
And in that section of the book, as you mentioned, Du Bois is writing about similar things to what Vasconcelos is writing about as well, right? Can you talk a little bit about Vasconcelos?
Of course. So Vasconcelos is a Mexican intellectual. He was also very prominent, rose to become Minister of Education, mm-hmm. And ran for the presidency but lost. And he is known in Latin America as one of the people who has most, you know, as one of the people who has most popularized this ideology of mestizaje, racial mixing. Mm-hmm. One of the things that he argued, and this is, you know, one of the themes of the book, mm-hmm. is that all these thinkers, African-American thinkers in the U.S. and Latin Americans, are all arguing against the scientific racist theories of the day that mm-hmm. say that Black people and Latin Americans are inferior because they're mixed or because they have Black and Indigenous populations. So according to these theories, right, it's only the Europeans and only Northern Europeans who are the most advanced, the most superior people. And so Latin American thinkers are also writing against these theories. And so Vasconcelos, instead of, you know, he kind of turns this idea on its head and says, you know, instead of mixture being what makes us inferior, mm-hmm. it makes us, in fact, superior, right? Mm. So he basically inverts it. And he says, he writes this book called The Cosmic Race, mm-hmm. and basically argues that everybody in the world is becoming more mixed and that the future is the development of this this mixed race, cosmic race, that's going to bring together the best of all people. Now, there are a number of problems with this, one of them being that, you know, he, unlike Du Bois, who, you know, for example, did acknowledge that a lot of mixture had happened because of sexual violence.
Sure.
Right. Vasconcelos kind of tends to gloss over that, mm-hmm. you know, so he doesn't really acknowledge the text really kind of glorifies Latin America is this place where you don't have racism, because he's using that to make a contrast with the U.S., which he says is very racist, right? So one of the things that text is like an example of is the way in which for Latin Americans, the U.S. becomes, oh, we are not the U.S., mm-hmm. they're racist, and we're better than them at this one thing, right? And so part of the way in which they try to fight back to resist, U.S. imperialism is by making these arguments that they have a better race.
Right.
And so the Vasconcelos is a really interesting example of that. But what I also write about in my chapter on him are some other texts of his, which are not as read as often, in which we actually see a kind of more radical or progressive, where he goes even further with the critique of white supremacy and of colonialism, and actually critiques the way in which Latin Americans themselves have internalized these ideas.
Okay.
So in a text that he published in the 1930s, which is really fascinating, he actually writes about Latinos in the U.S., and he says, these Latin American elites who think that there is no race, they think that until they cross the border, and then they realize that they've always been seen as inferior. Mm. And that they are not white, and nobody sees them as white.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has this whole, basically, argument for how, you know, Latin Americans need to stop trying to identify with whiteness and instead need to make common cause with said that they're people of color.
Wow.
So it's very interesting.
I would agree. some very interesting work that you've done here, Juliet. I mean, this is excellent. I mean, this is so enlightening for me, you know, knowing so much about Douglas and Du Bois, and just to see this comparison to these thinkers from the Spanish-speaking world in the Americas. I think this is awesome. And again, the book is Theorizing Race in the Americas. Douglas Sarmiento, Du Bois, and Van Vasconcelos. How'd I do?
Perfect.
All right. I'm better. Just a few times, Juliet, and I got it. And we're here with Professor Juliet Hooker. She's a professor of political science at Brown University. And she wrote this book that came to us from our friends at Oxford University Press. And so I'm hoping that everyone's enjoying this great knowledge that Juliet is sharing with us. I mean, this is really interesting stuff. And, you know, before we go, I don't want to keep you all day, Juliet. I could talk with you about this stuff all day. We could get some of that Starbucks and we can just, you know, keep going. But I don't want to do that. I know you're probably getting ready for your small fall semester as well, right?
Yes,
yeah, your first one at Brown, so we want to make sure that you leave a good impression on those students. But before we go, I just wanted to ask you, and I like to ask, you know, the scholars that I talk with this, how long did the process take for you to complete this project, and what type of research methods did you use? I think it's really important for people who maybe are up-and-coming scholars or people, just average person who's interested in conducting some research. Can you share that with us?
Well, books take a long time to write. So this book in particular took a long time. Actually, it didn't take that long given the amount of research that I had to do. But you know, I first had the idea for the book in 2009 was when I started thinking about it.
Okay.
But I didn't really have a chance to really dig down and just focus on research because of administrative work and other things I was doing until, you know, a few years ago. So, but what the reason that this was this book required a lot of work was because of all the, you know, one of the things that I do in the book is I try to go beyond, often when we read, you know, certain figures, we only read one book or we read their major. So we know the narrative by Douglas, or we know Souls of Black Folk by Du Bois, or in the case of Sarmiento, we know his most famous book, which is Facundo, Civilization or Barbarism. But one of the things that I argue is that when we do that, we restrict our view of some of these people, right? Du Bois lives into his 80s, Sarmiento lives also these very long lives, and their ideas change over time.
Right.
So if we only look at something that somebody published when they were, you know, what, 28, and they go on to live until they're, you know, there's decades of work that we're not taking into account. So part of it was trying to be really comprehensive in looking at the various periods. And of course, nothing is completely exhaustive. I mean, you could write books about a whole book on any of these people, and people write multiple books on different aspects of their thought. But one of the things that made it very time-consuming was trying to read comprehensively in their work on the area I was interested in. So one of the things that I'm clear about is this is a book about their ideas about race, not a book about their ideas on other subjects. So that limited what I was doing. But within that, I wanted to read from different times, different eras, writings from different eras. And in some cases, I had to go to unusual places to look for the material I was interested in. So, for example, one of the things that the focus of my chapter on Douglas are his writings about the Caribbean and Central America. Mm-hmm. But those aren't found in his biographies, which is what people usually write about. They're in his journalism. So I had to go to his newspapers to look at what Douglas actually published in his newspapers about Central America and Haiti and the Dominican Republic, right? So one of the things that I would say, one of my lessons learned from doing this book is that we can be creative about the archive, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be, sometimes finding someone's ideas, it's not necessarily going to be in the place that we think that they are. So one of the things that I use, for example, in the chapter on Sarmiento, right, I actually look at his correspondence with some of his letters, because in them he talks about what happens when he comes to the U.S., who he's meeting, how that's changing, his ideas about things. Mm-hmm. And so it gives us insight into how his political thought evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And it also means you can look at different kinds of texts, right? So one of the things that I write about with Du Bois is, right, I read a novel. And I'm not reading it as a literary critic, because I'm not a literary critic. It's what are the political ideas that we can take out of this piece of fiction that Du Bois wrote?
Absolutely. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, it helps people to really understand what you need to do to be able to, you know, conduct research, a book length research study like you did here. I mean, it's not just going through those places that you would normally go, those regular, kind of haunts. You got to dig a little deeper and look in some different places and really have a specific focus. And like you said, you know, it's very clear from the title of this book, Theorizing Race. You know, there are many other things you could talk about, but you really need to have a clear focus on what it is that you want to accomplish in order to do the best job and not kind of, veer off. I couldn't think of the word I was looking for. Veer off too broadly or too widely. Right. So thank you so much, Juliet, for sharing that with us. And again, the book is Theorizing Race in the Americas, Douglas Sarmiento, Du Bois, and Vasconcelos. And the author is Juliet Hooker from our friends at Oxford University Press. And, you know, thank you so much, Juliet. I don't want to hold you too much longer here. I mean, this has been great. You've really given us some good insight and really made, in my view, your book really attractive for people to want to go out and purchase and learn more about. And remember, right from our New Books in African American Studies page, you can click right through and you can purchase from our partner bookseller. You can purchase Juliet's book. But before we go, Juliet, I wanted to give you an opportunity. If any of the listeners want to reach out to you, you know, what would be an easier way for them to do that if they want to ask you some more questions or find out, you know, more things that you're involved in, you know, maybe share some of your current or future research or any other productions that you wanted to mention. And I will just mention for you your first book you mentioned earlier, but I will say the name for everyone is Race and the Politics of Solidarity, right? That's mm-hmm. Juliet's first book. So if you want to read her book that she wrote before Theorizing Race in the Americas, you can read that one. It's again, it's Race and the Politics of Solidarity. But yeah, definitely share with us any future projects, current projects, or anything that you want to point our attention to.
Yeah. So if anyone needs to reach me, I'm easily found through the Brown website. Just go to the Political Science Department and my contact information is there.
Excellent.
I've been working, one of the things that happened was when I was writing this book, the world doesn't stop.
No, it doesn't.
When the process of writing, for example, Ferguson happened. And while I was doing that, I was like, how can I be writing about the 19th century and this, you know, the world is going up in flames and Black people are being killed. So I ended up writing an essay about Black Lives Matter and the history of the civil rights movement and how that's been used to critique the Black Lives Matter movement.
Okay.
And then as I was finishing the book, of course, there was the presidential election and the rise of Donald Trump. And so I actually just published an essay that just came out in South Atlantic Quarterly called Black Protest, White Grievance. That's about how this idea of white people as victims has become politicized in the Obama and the Trump era. So these are all part of a current project that I'm working on that's really trying to move to the sort of trying to figure out where we are in terms of racial politics in the U.S. right now.
Okay.
And what this means for for Black political thought and Black politics, which are the things that I write about.
Wow. Well, those sound interesting. And if they end up, which I'm sure it will, based on what you're saying, ends up matriculating together into a nice book project, you know we want you back on the New Books Network, Juliet.
Well, I'd be happy to be back. It's probably going to take a while, but
yeah.
You know.
As we said, these aren't romance novels that you're writing, so it does take some time. Well, that's okay. Anytime that you want to come and talk with us about one of your projects, you're always welcome. I do appreciate you spending some time with us today. And we're going to let you go here shortly and give you a chance to get ready for those new Brown students. And just let me say, all you Brown University students, you all be very nice to Dr. Hooker this semester, okay? She's a very nice woman, and I want you all to be nice to her and welcome her in at Brown University. We're going to miss her at University of Texas at Austin, so you treat her nicely, okay, at Brown University. So maybe some of your students will come in and say they listened to this podcast when they were kind of researching you a little bit. That would be pretty cool. All right. So again, the book is Theorizing Race in the Americas, and the author is Juliet Hooker. And thank you so much for spending time with us on the New Books Network, Juliet. And if you can tell the audience goodbye, we'll let you go there. But oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say thank you. It's been a pleasure to be able to talk to you about the book and then to reach out to your listeners. And it's, you know, thing about being writing a book is you never know how it's going to be received. So whenever people are interested, that's the best response that you can have. So I'm really, it's always a pleasure to be able to talk about the book. And thank you for having me on your podcast.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm definitely interested. I've learned a lot more just in talking with you today, and hopefully we can talk a little further offline. And I'm going to try to get her to Houston for a book talk. We're going to negotiate a little bit offline, but don't worry, my people in H-Town. I'm going to try to see if I can get Dr. Hooker to come and do a book talk with us sometime to talk about her book, Theorizing Race in the Americas. All right, so we're going to let Juliet go. But, yes, if you can say goodbye to the audience for us, Juliet.
Goodbye.
Yeah, or I don't know how you say that in Spanish, but maybe it's some Spanish listeners there as well.
I'll say nos vemos, which will be soon.
Yeah, because this will probably be on New Books in Latin American Studies, too, one of our sister channels. All right. So we're going to let Juliet get ready to go to work at Brown University, and we will see you all and hear you all next time. God bless, peace, and love, and I'm out of here. This is James Stansel, the host of the New Books in African American Studies channel on the New Books Network. Peace and love. All right, we're back on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network, New Books in African American Studies. I'm your host, James Stansel, and we just finished up a great interview with Juliet Hooker from Brown University, her book, Theorizing Race in the Americas. Hope you enjoyed that interview. It's really some good information. This is really a great book, so I highly recommend going and check it out. And so we're going to wish Juliet Hooker, our new friend there, a wonderful semester, her first one at Brown University as a full professor. So good luck, Dr. Hooker. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you, hear you next time. Peace and love on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network.